You want to look with me over to 2 Timothy chapter 4. 2 Timothy chapter 4. I guess if we were to look at the New Testament and decide who is it who serves as perhaps the best model for us in what we need to be as Christians, there might be a number of people who come to mind. But I would say as we look at the life of the Apostle Paul, we would be hard-pressed to find anybody who served God as faithfully as that man did. We look at from his conversion on, we see the work that he did in the service of God. We see the things that he suffered as the result of that work in the Lord. And we understand that this was a man who indeed was converted to the Lord. It's interesting here as we look at 2 Timothy chapter 4. Down in verses 6 through 8, this is very near the end of his life. In fact, perhaps one of the last writings that we have from him. He writes to Timothy and he says, "For I am already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." You read those words, and here is a man who is confident, not in himself, but in the Lord. Here's a man who's confident that what the Lord has promised, the Lord is going to fulfill. And so as he's looking at his imminent death coming, he says, "I am assured that the Lord has a reward waiting for me. I am assured that the Lord is going to be true to his promises." And we look at a man who is so confident in the Lord, a man who is the epitome of what we would desire to be in the walk of Christ. And we say, how did he get there? This morning, I want to talk about the foundation stone of that question. As we think about the Apostle Paul, and as we think about what he became, I want us to back up to his conversion. This morning, I want us to look at the time that he made the decision to become a part of God's family, that he made the decision to surrender to the Lord. And this morning, I would encourage any who are in our midst who are not Christians to pay particular attention to his life. If you have not given your life over to God, think about the things that we're talking about this morning. If you have, don't tune out. There are a number of things that I think we find within the conversion of Saul that help us to maintain our walk in its purity. No matter what stage we are, whether we're new in the faith, whether we have been in the faith a few years, or like we just read here in 2 Timothy, like the Apostle Paul, we're looking at our eternity. Whatever the case, this morning, I want us to talk about the conversion of Saul and what impact that can have on our lives as well. As we consider the man and who he is, I think the basic place we need to start is in looking at the standard that he was choosing to use before his conversion. The life of Saul is quite interesting to look at who he was and then what he became. Because who he was actually considered to be very good by a great number of people. The problem was he was using the wrong standard in that. You might glance back over to Acts chapter 22. We'll be referencing this chapter two or three times throughout the lesson this morning. But as you look back to verse 3, the apostle here is giving a testimony of his conversion, and he backs up and he says, "This is what I was before I became a Christian, before I gave my life over to God. This is what I was." Now note once again, quite an important resume that he gives. He says, "I am indeed a Jew, born of Tarsus in Cilicia, but brought up in the city at the feet of Gamaliel, taught according to the strictness of our father's law, and was zealous toward God, as you all are today." As we think about Paul before Christ, what do we find? We find a man who was very much respected by those around him. As we think about perhaps some of those older Jewish men as they were sitting on the bench and Saul would walk by, you can almost imagine them kind of sitting up straight and resting assured that the future of the Jewish nation was good. Here was a man who by Jewish standards was a man to be admired, a man to be praised, a young man who was setting the examples for those around him. Here was a man who had the right upbringing. Here was a man who had had the right teaching according to the Jews. Here was a man who not only had those things, but was zealous in the things that he did. As we think about Jews of that day and age, here was the model for what somebody ought to be. But despite all of that, we find that Saul was still, in and of himself, not allowing that to go to his head. While people would have looked at him and perhaps rather admiringly said things about him, the Apostle Paul, before his conversion, was doing things not for the glory of men, but to carry out the will of God. In fact, we find that he makes that statement on two or three occasions, that he was displaying his zeal, but yet displaying it in somewhat of a wrong way. We look at what he was doing before his conversion. Here was Saul going out and seeking to fulfill the law of God by killing these worshipers of false gods. Note with me just a minute back in Deuteronomy chapter 13. Here in Acts chapter 22, we've just read about what he was doing, the things that he was doing to carry out the death sentence on those who would worship this false god in his view. He was simply doing what the law told him to do, wasn't he? Look at verse 6 of chapter 13. He says, "If your brother, the son of your mother, your son or your daughter, the wife of your bosom, or your friend, who is as your own soul, secretly entices you, saying, 'Let us go and serve other gods, which you have not known, neither you nor your fathers, of the gods of the people which are all around you, near to you or far off from you, from one end of the earth to the other end of the earth,' you shall not consent to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him or conceal him, but you shall surely kill him. Your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of the people. And you shall stone him with stones until he dies, because he sought to entice you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, from the house of bondage." Now, as you consider this, this is what Saul was doing. Here he was saying to all of these people who were serving this false god, Jesus Christ, this man who was trying to put himself in the place of God, what Saul was doing in his zeal was going after the followers of this man, just as the Lord, he thought, had told him to do back in the law of Moses. In fact, we come to the New Testament, and we find Paul making this testimony even of himself, that that's why he was doing these things. You remember back in Acts chapter 7, verse 59, this is where Stephen is being stoned, and it talks about how Stephen was there and what was going on. Here was a young man named Saul who was consenting to this death, and they laid their garments at his feet. In other words, he was a part of what was going on. Here was a man who was consenting to the death of this worshiper of false gods and making sure that the law was carried out. And then as we just read in Acts chapter 22, we find him saying that same thing, that what he was doing was seeking to put away those who were worshiping incorrectly. The man Saul, the Apostle Paul, before he found Christ, thought he was right. In fact, he zealously carried out the will of God, so he thought. What was the problem, though? The problem was he was working by the standard, but the standard was wrong. Here was a man who had the praise of those around him. Here was a man who in good conscience was doing what he thought he needed to do. Here was a man who, if anyone questioned him, would hold up the standard and say, "Here is why I'm doing this." Nonetheless, the standard was wrong. Nonetheless, Saul was not what God wanted him to be. Now, let me pause here for just a minute. As you and I consider Saul at this point in his conversion process, I want to pause for just a minute and say, I believe this is still a problem for us today. I think at times we see people, perhaps even ourselves on occasions, falling into the same trap that Saul found himself in. As you and I consider where we stand before the Lord this morning, it is important and imperative for each of us to examine the standard that we use. Many times at the point of conversion, we'll hear our friends in the world tell us it really doesn't matter how you come to Christ, as long as you come. It really makes no difference how you choose to accept salvation, as long as you choose to accept it. And so we may have someone telling us, this is the way to heaven. This is the way to heaven. This is the way to heaven. And others saying, all of those ways are the ways to heaven. You and I need to consider, what standard are we going by? If we are choosing rightness by our own standard, if we are making the decision that we are right by judging that for ourselves, we're in very grave danger, just as the Apostle Paul was. In fact, note something that he wrote to the Corinthian brethren over in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. As we look at this down in verse 12, as he's talking, in fact, you think about 2 Corinthians, the first part of it is dealing with a number of issues. And notice what he tells them concerning one of those issues, verse 12. He says, for we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. Now there's a whole lot of pronouns going on there, isn't there? But what's he saying? He's saying, if you are saying, I'm okay because I think I'm okay, I'm right because I say I'm right, he says, I want none of that. I want nothing to do with that kind of thought. But yet, when we look at a standard and we say, well, I like this standard, it appeals to me, it's what I like, it meets my needs, it meets my wishes, I'm falling right into that category. When it comes to initial conversion, we've got to be very careful about that. But I would say, at any point in our lives, we've got to be careful of that. My guess is this morning I may be talking to few to none who would have any discrepancy with coming to the Lord from what's found in the Bible. But yet I know as Christians, all of us are tempted throughout our lives to change the standard. We may say, well, I know that's what the Bible says, but I really don't think God would. And whenever we start saying things like that, we better back up. We better be careful. Because like Saul, we're going by a standard that is not correct. When we consider this, I think we can look down to another verse here in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 in verse 18. And notice the unacceptable nature of this idea. He says, for not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. If I say, well, I think I'm doing the right thing, I know I'm right by my standard, God says you're missing the whole point. It's not by you that you're going to get a commendation. It's by the Lord Himself. Let me say as well on this point that we've got to be very careful that there may be others who are telling us that we're living by the right standard, when in reality we're not. Do you think Saul fell into that category? You think there were people telling him, saying, you're doing the right thing, you're carrying out the will of God? I'm just almost sure of it. I think what the Lord said about the Pharisees, and in fact we might just note over in Matthew chapter 23, we oftentimes come to this chapter to show the fallacy of their teachings, to show how wrong they were. But I want us to note something that the Lord Himself says here in verse 15. He says, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte, and when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. Now that tells me a couple of things. It tells me that what they were teaching is wrong, but nonetheless they were determined to teach it. And I would say this, that while we give the Pharisees a very rough time, as perhaps we need to from the things that Jesus said, they believed they were right. And they were telling others that they were right. And so here is Paul, this young man, growing up in this doctrine. He's growing up by this standard. He's got the old set of Jews who are commending him and saying, "You're doing the right thing," when he was not. You and I must be very careful of making judgments based on what others think. Now, there is a time and place for us to discuss with our brethren what's right. There's a time and place for us to get together and make decisions about the work of the church. But when it boils down to it, I'm going to stand before the Lord and He is going to ask me about the standard that I accepted. And if it's the wrong one, I just don't see the Lord saying, "Well, that's okay. They told you you were all right. You were misinformed. You were misled." No. Saul had people telling him the wrong thing, but saying it was right. And you and I must be careful of that as well. We've got to make sure that we are looking toward the right standard. As Saul, we must come to understand the true standard's importance. Now, with that being said, let's talk about his contact with the Lord. To say that Saul had an unusual introduction to the Lord would be somewhat of an understatement, wouldn't it? As we consider the conversion that he had, let's go back to the book of Acts, chapter 22, where we were looking at earlier, and just reference a couple of things here. Acts chapter 22, beginning in about verse 6, he starts talking about his journey. He talks about coming near Damascus, verse 6 tells us, and suddenly a great light from heaven shone around me. Verse 7, "And I fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to me, 'Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?' So I answered, 'Who are you, Lord?' And he said to me, 'I am Jesus of Nazareth, whom you were persecuting.'" Now let's consider what's going on here. Here Saul is going to carry out his work by the standard, isn't it? The wrong one. But he's on his way to bring punishment to those who are seeking to follow after this Jesus. And all of a sudden, as he's on his way, the light shines around him. And whose voice does he hear but Jesus Christ Himself? Asking the question, "Why is it that you're turning against me?" Obviously, Saul is puzzled by this. And the Lord understands that. The Lord has done this to get his attention. And he goes on then to tell him, "I'm going to let you know what you need to do." Going on down to verses 14 and 15, says, "Then he said, 'The God of our fathers has chosen you just that you should know His will, to see the just one and to hear the voice of His mouth.'" Verse 15, "For you will be His witness to all men of what you have seen and heard." God said to Saul, "I have a message for you. There is something that I want you to understand concerning my plans for you." And what he says is "You're going to know my will." Despite Saul's feelings that he knew God, he didn't. Despite the fact that if we had asked Saul, "Do you know who God is?" he would have said, "Sure, I've known about Him my entire life." Jesus is saying, "You are really going to understand who God is now." Verse 14 tells us, "You'll know His will." And he says, "You are going to see the just one." Now, isn't it interesting that this false god, who Saul had been persecuting the followers of this false god, now stood and said, "You're going to know who I am. You're going to see the one who truly is just." And he goes on to say, "You're going to hear His voice. I have instructions for you. I have things for you to do." And we know at that point that Saul is going to hear what God has for him to do. Now again, I want you to think about that for a minute. As we think about the contact that the Lord had with Saul initially, and think about where we stand, what of our contact with the Lord? What is it when we come into contact with them today? Some might say, well, if I could just be jolted like Saul was, I would then know that this is what I need to do. If I could simply be knocked off my horse, if I could have the light shine around me, if I could hear the voice of Jesus, if I could have that jolting like Saul received, then like him, I would understand that God has a plan for me. Well, I want to ask you something. What do you think Romans 5 ought to be for us? Look over to chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. Romans chapter 5, verses 9 and 10. And as Paul here is writing to the brethren, notice what he says about the Lord. He says, much more then, having now been justified by His blood, we shall be saved from wrath through Him. For if when we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of His Son, much more, having been reconciled, we shall be saved by His life. Now let me ask you something. If that doesn't jolt us, what will? When we read about the Son of God coming to this earth, when we think about Him giving His life for us, not because we're such good folks, because here we were good friends of the Lord and He was showing His friendship to us. No. Paul says, while we were enemies, Christ did this for us. If that's not a jolt for us, I'm not sure that there's anything that will jolt us to salvation. If we cannot appreciate what God has done, the sacrifice that's been done, there's nothing that's going to bring salvation to us. But we understand that. And in understanding what God has done, we need to understand that just as Saul, the Lord has a purpose for us. The Lord has things that He expects of us once we become a Christian. I tell you, there's been way, way too much teaching that becoming a Christian is kind of the end of things. It's the beginning. When you and I become Christians, we're ending the old walk and we're beginning what we really ought to be. And as we consider that, I want us to understand that just as Saul, there is a purpose for us. It's to know His will. It's to know what God would have us to do and to go by absolutely nothing else. Notice what Paul tells the Galatians as he writes to them, telling them about things we talked about of a similar nature of standards and what they ought to follow. Look at what he says in verse 8. He says, but even if we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed. God says, I have a purpose for you, and that is to know my will. To know my standard. There's only one way of doing that. It's becoming very familiar with this book. God says a purpose that I have for you is to study this out, to understand the things that I want you to do. And just as to Saul, He says, I have the purpose for you to see the just one. We might say, well, how are we going to see the Lord Jesus? How can we see Him as Saul did? Well, look at chapter 5 of Matthew, verse 8. We look at this familiar section, the Beatitudes of the Sermon on the Mount. And it's interesting what the Lord says here in verse 8. He says, blessed are the pure in heart, for what? For they shall see God. I understand that's going to happen when judgment comes. I understand that the righteous are going to be at home with Him. I'm not so sure, though, that that's what the Lord's looking at here. I believe Jesus is saying that when you are pure in heart, you're going to see God for who He is. When you are pure in heart, you're going to see godliness so that you can follow it. What's His purpose for us? His purpose is that we look upon Jesus Christ, that we see God for who He is, and we mold ourselves in that direction. And that will only come when we're willing to hear His voice. Just as Saul, God says that purpose for you is the same. In fact, looking over to some of the latter writings of John, In 1 John chapter 2, looking down to verse 3, John puts these kinds of things in such practical, plain language. What does he say in verse 3? He says, "Now by this we know that we know Him if we keep His commandments." How is it that you and I know we're following the right standard? How is it we know that we're going to see God? How is it that we're going to do what we ought to do? It's by following His commandments. Simple. John puts it in simple language, doesn't he? But yet this is the decision that we make if we're going to choose to be a true follower of God. God has a purpose for everyone to serve in His kingdom. Yet there's something else we've got to see. We see that Saul was going by the wrong standard. We see that he had a contact with the Lord, the Lord telling him what to do. But ultimately, I think you and I have got to understand that the decision belonged to Saul. The decision belonged to him. The Lord did not force obedience. The Lord did not make Saul do anything that Saul was unwilling to do. In fact, looking back over to Acts chapter 22, note verse 16 of this chapter. Acts chapter 22, looking to verse 16. Here is the message that Ananias gives him. He says, "And now why are you waiting? Arise and be baptized and wash away your sins, calling on the name of the Lord." And upon hearing what he needed to do, Saul made the right decision. If we look back to Acts chapter 9, verse 18, we might just quickly flip back there and notice as he's recounting these things, the writer's recounting these things for us about him in verse 18. It says, "Immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he received his sight at once, and he arose and was baptized." By making the right decision, he showed himself ready to be the Lord's vessel. He understood that his standard was wrong, and that had to be changed. He understood that the Lord had a purpose for him, but before that purpose could be fulfilled, he had to become a part of the Lord's family. And in making the decision to become a Christian, to actually become a part of this group he was persecuting, he showed that he was ready to do the Lord's will. And certainly the same applies for us today. As you and I consider the decision that rests before us, it's our choice to accept the Lord's standard. Now again, somebody might say, "Well, I just disagree with you fully there." Saul didn't have a choice in this. Here he had that light shine around him. Well, the Lord speaks to him, blinds him, puts these scales on his eyes. Has the Lord ever given signs to other people that they refuse to follow? You think about 10 signs that came to Pharaoh. And how did Pharaoh end? Just as hard-hearted as he was before. Because God sent Saul signs that this was a message from him, did in no way force him to follow the Lord. And I would say to us that as we think about what the Lord has given us, He may not put scales on our eyes, and He may not shine a light around us and tell us what to do, but He's given us the message right here. He's saying, as He did to Saul, "You either accept or reject. It's your decision. It's your choice." But just as with Saul, I hope that all of us will make the decision that God clearly shows is the right decision to make. As Peter wrote over in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 21, baptism is what saves. As you and I consider where we stand before the Lord right now, we need to understand that if we are not Christians, what we are doing is kicking against the goads. We're doing what the Lord said Saul was doing. Saul, you're rejecting, you're pushing against me. Now sometimes we have the tendency to try to sugarcoat things and say, well, really I'm not, because one day I plan to become a Christian. One day it's in my plans. I've got that on the calendar. I'm not kicking against the Lord. Yes, you are. If you understand what the Lord expects of you, and understand what God desires of you, and you say, I'm not ready to do that, you're making the decision to go against it. Isn't it much better to have the attitude of Saul at his conversion, where he recognizes fully his wrongness before the Lord, recognizing fully that he's standing by the wrong standard, but makes the decision that he wants to be on the Lord's side? By making that decision, you and I as well are determining if the Lord can use us in His service, if we can be vessels in His service. And so this morning, as you consider these things, Saul did the right thing. Question is, will we? Wherever we are in our walk, if it's initial salvation, if it's the decision to become a Christian, are we going to make the right decision today? If it's the fact that we made that right decision, but along the way we've changed standards again, we've gone back to the wrong standard, will we come back to Him today? That's the question that's before us. I wonder why Saul didn't delay. I wonder why Saul didn't take some time to think about it. He knew when the Lord spoke, the Lord's right. When the Lord says something, that's what you better do. And from everything we find from there on out in his life, he never turned back. He never said, I regret the decision. He never said, I wish I'd taken longer. The only thing he did was to build on that foundation that he started when he was told to arise and be baptized to wash away his sin. Go ahead and get your songbook out, if you will, and turn to the number that's been announced. And maybe in our assembly this morning, there are some who have been grappling with this decision. The Lord has spoken to you through His Word. You know, not from any kind of miraculous way, but by the fact that you're reading the words on the page that the Lord has recorded. That you know it's time. It's time to become a Christian. It's time to turn back to the Lord. Like Saul. Make the decision to go by the right standard. Now that you've got that contact with Him, obey the Lord as He would have you to do. If we can assist you in any way in that, won't you come while we stand and sing together?